Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Fill My Eyes with Poetry. I hope everyone's having a great day. I hope you all had a good week. And as always, I hope you have a better weekend to follow. It's good to be here tonight. It might get a little crazy, so far it's just me by myself. And we all know how I can be with people, let alone me by myself. So anyway, we have a nice board full of poetry tonight. We have some carryovers from a couple of shows. We have some, submissions that were put on the board for us to enjoy this week. As always, wonderful work, great poets. And, I think it's going to be a good night. I do. But I always have that kind of faith. We have a good many fan clubs, and I'm really looking forward to it. Let me see. What else is new and exciting in our world? Welcome to all our new members of LMT. We have quite a few. Each day we have a couple, a few, you never know. That's always a nice feeling to see people come into the group. And I know you guys will give them warm welcomes if you see them saying hello, because they're all good like that. Very, very good like that. And, hello, Manya, hello, Rick, hello, Lou, and, I don't know if I saw anybody else in the room or not. The names are not right in front of me right now. Oh, EJ. Hello, EJ. Good to have you all. And, yeah. So I guess, I don't know, I guess maybe I should, like, kind of get with the program. This could be fun. But let me see now. How can I do this? I think I'm going to start right at the top of the list with this one. And I have some audios that I can pull on. So here we go. This one is called A Dog's Pavane Number 4 by Jack Blue. On the moonlit hill I met a merry jazzy marionette, twittering in rosy rhyme, just to beckon me to climb. So I did eventually, as her shadow waved me. At the very top I sat, then a donkey with a hat squatted nobly by my side, like a cool medieval guide. His guitar began to ring like he was a groovy king, with the saxophones of the owls and the hound's happy howls. He was always here to bray, simply for the Milky Way, on the humble throne below, about 400 years ago. By my side I saw a stone rocking powerfully alone to the aurora's reminiscence or the bright celestial forest. His guitar was fading out, and I dimly heard him shout. And boom. You know, what a great piece by Jack Blue. Every time I see one of these donkey pieces, though, it takes me over to Midsummer's Night's Dream. And it's not anything, like, specific. Well, it is. There's parts. You know, he speaks of the donkey and you know, like he was a groovy king. You know, and the donkey is playing, an instrument. Yeah, I think he said a doggone guitar was the word. Yes. And I think that it just, it always leads me in that direction. And with that, it always gives me, you know, my own imagery on top of what he's offered to us. And I, you know, Jack always offers good imagery. He adds music into his pieces any way he can, whether it's just mention of an instrument or a certain type of musical notes or, you know, what have you as you go along. But just a really interesting and wonderful piece with great, I don't know, just great detail. And I think that that was wonderful. And thank you, Luke, for sharing with us tonight. And let's see. Yes. I think it just, it's good stuff. Definitely good stuff. So thank you. Thank you, Luke, as always. Okay. Well, I guess I needed to put up the link, huh? That would have been good so you all could have read with me. Jeez Louise, you know, it's hard to get good help these days. I keep telling everybody. There we go. Look, Gray Eyes has joined me in the studio. Hi, Gray.
Hi, Phil.
Oh, you guys
are
so sore eyes. Happy Friday. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
How's life? Very good.
Yeah, it's good.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Very cool. Very cool. It's nice to have you. I was
Thank
feeling
you.
Kind of
Is it
lonely.
Just
did you hear that poem by Jack Blue?
No, I didn't. Sorry.
Okay. Well, that's okay. I'll have you comment on the next one. I'm not, you know, going to beat you over the head. I'm glad to have you here. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's just funny for me. Yes. So, yep, we're back at another Friday. And you have a show tomorrow night, don't you? It is you,
I do,
correct?
Yes. Yeah.
Yes. You want to tell us what your topic is and everything? You know.
Yep.
Just because we can.
Yeah.
You didn't hear me, did you?
No, I didn't. Sorry.
It was a good try, though. No, I said, do you want to tell us what your topic is for tomorrow night?
Okay, sure. It is the
awesome.
Based on the song What's Love Got to Do with It by Tina Turner.
Oh, yeah. Well,
yeah,
Tina.
So.
I like Tina Turner. Very good. Very good. That'd be good. I think that that's just wonderful. Yeah. That should be a great show. I ask that question often. What does love have to do with it?
Yeah.
Spit my hand, of course. Mm-hmm. Okay, so let me see. Where do I want to go from here? I think I'm going to put up an audio. I'll give you time to settle in a little bit. Hey, Lou. Okay, the next piece I'm going to put up is by Mr. M, and it's called Enter Archelaus. Put that on. That's if I can find it, because now I'm a little slow. There we go.
This is my recital of Enter Archelaus. In the moment of my birth, time stood still. The stars did not shine, the winds did not blow, nor was a stellar whisper audible within the cosmos. I was born in death. My lifeless body dangled from the fetid cord that tied me to my dwindling mother. But then, as a mockery to life itself, I took my first breath. I loosed the first of cries, and it sent a shockwave throughout this galaxy. I remember it all. I saw as each star, each fleck of light died out. I watched every living thing crumble and wither into dust, all to feed me its energy. My mother was an immortal, but my influence was so great that even her immortal spirit could not withstand the purging of the light. My body now teems with raw energy from the life and light of this galaxy. Even the voids and everything in between that existed therein had imparted their knowledge and experiences to me. They shall not fall to oblivion, for they are with me now. I shall take my throne of souls and bones as the new inbringer. I will be the great equalizer, the deliverer of the damned, and the ever-present fate that all living things fear but cannot hope to escape. I have but one obstacle, the one who reigns as the champion in the kingdom long forgotten. He who once rode alongside of the gods upon his pale steed, but has since transcended them. Feared by angels, demons, the abyssal, and the celestial, he is known as Death, and also as Father.
Yeah. Excellent, excellent job, Robert. Thanks for sharing with us tonight. Greg, do you want to start us off?
Yeah, you did an excellent read within SoundCloud. You know, the poem was powerful and engaging. You know, it was a strong storyline from start to finish about the son of death itself and all that came for him to be in his power. And his father is his only obstacle, which is kind of haunting. Just a beautiful poem. Riveting.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Wonderful, wonderful poem. And I want to welcome Lou Yu to the show. Hi, Lou Yu.
Hi, Phil. Hey, Gray.
Hi, Lou Yu.
Good to have you. Did you happen to hear Robert's poem?
I did. My mom called me while, I've read this poem before. You know, there's something about Robert's poetry, the darkness. It is such darkness that is so thick. It's like it slowly sucks you into the imagery, and you start to feel the emotions that are in between these lines. And, you know, I mean, just right here where he says, I was born in death. My lifeless body dangled from the fetid cord that tied me to my dwindling mother. And, you know, and then, you know, he says, but then as mockery to life itself, I took my first breath. I loosed the first of cries, and sent a shockwave throughout the galaxy. And, you know, this is exactly what his poetry does. It brings you in and out, and you just flow with all these dark images and emotions, and, you know, you can actually feel it. So I always enjoy reading his poetry and hearing, and especially if we get to hear him read.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I think that Robert did an excellent job with this piece. I've heard it before as well, but, you know, it never gets old. I think what's so intriguing about Robert's writing, when you listen to him read his work, or you read his work, he draws you in, and everything's believable. Everything's believable. He has such a power behind it that it just strikes you as being almost real, like real. You don't sit and doubt it.
Mm-hmm.
You sit there and go with it. Say it draws you in, and it just makes it. It all works. And I think that that's the beauty of his writing. So excellent job, Robin. Thanks for sharing with us tonight. I appreciate that very much. Now we have another caller. I'm not sure who it is, so we're gonna find out together.
Okay.
Hey guys,
hello.
Hey
Jan, welcome aboard.
Hey guys.
Hello.
Hey Phil, Lou, Gray.
Hi.
Yes.
Hi.
Great. Great to be
here.
It's Dan DeShino. DeShino. Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Dan.
Thought I recognized the boys.
Yeah. Well, it is excellent to have you aboard. So let me see.
I just want to take a second and congratulations on your gold, Daniel.
Oh, yeah. I was honored. Nice. Thank you very much, Gray, for the gold. Very honored, as always. Never expect it, and always happy, so thank you. That was a fun one,
yeah,
Gray. I really appreciate that.
Yep, you bet.
Hey, ma'am, yeah. Maybe I just said hi on the chat.
Oh, ma'am, yeah.
We're all such a friendly group here.
You sure are.
I actually came on to rescue you, Phil, because you were all by yourself, and Gray and Lou beat me to the punch. So, see, you got all kinds of friends here.
Gray was really quick to get everything. Thank God. Yeah, I wasn't too sure what was going to happen, but I said, well, you know, I'll just give it a shot. So, well,
yeah.
How bad could it be, right? It could be pretty bad. You guys are, wow. Yeah, it could be crazy.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, the next piece I'm going to put up, Gray, I'm going to ask you if you would read it for me, and it's by Cedar Chapman, and it's called Rest, My Father.
And shed blood, this lesson you taught me, so with blood ink I write, as I weep tonight, to see your frailty. Are you my son? Yes, Papa. Have some bone broth. I've roasted it, then simmered it for hours, like you taught me. It has strong fire chi, just like the fire you nurtured in me. Are you my son? Yes, Papa. Hold me tight. Let me hold you, like you used to, when I was afraid to use the bathroom in the darkest of nights. It's okay. Hold me tight. I promise you, with my life, it won't fall squatting. Are you my son? Yes, Papa. You needn't cry. Rest your head on my shoulder. Accidents happen. I'll change the seat. Don't feel defeated. Let's do it together. Here, hold this corner and pull tight. There, you see? Let us enjoy these final nights. Are you my son? Yes, Papa. I'm angry tonight. It's not right that I lose my castle, my pedestal, my chalice of courage, to have to atone alone, to teach my son alone how to work and hunt, how to build a secure home, how to shunt away self-doubt, how to love and caress a woman, but not have any fear. Are you my son? Yes, Papa. Time for you to rest now. Close your eyes. Let the morphine drip. May euphoria take your pain away. Hold my hand and find peace. It is through your love and patience you can finally bequeath. I am a man. I am a man. End poem.
Nice read, Gray. Great job. Dan, you want to start us off on this one?
Yes, I do. Yeah, this is definitely a personal write and really interesting. I've buried both my parents and my in-laws, so I went through all of this four times. And it's really interesting. Well, part of life, you know, the opposite is the unthinkable, right? Parents shouldn't be burying their kids the other way around, unfortunately, in life. You know, and seeing your parents like this, you know, that first stanza was so beautiful. Men shed blood, not tears, the lesson you taught me. So with blood ink I write as I weep tonight. That's a really powerful beginning. You know, and I saw my father as one of the smartest people I've ever seen. He was, you know, 6 months before he passed away, he was beating us in trivia contests. And then his his heart made his liver and kidneys really bad. And I never knew this, but when your kidneys are really, really bad, it can affect your mind. And he wasn't thinking right. He wasn't tasting food right. You know, and you see all these things, right? You know, when people really start falling apart. And it's so bad when the strongest people, you know, the people you looked up to, the people you always saw as strong and all this, are all of a sudden, you know, extremely weak and you know, in this part. And in this one here, you know, the person doesn't even recognize his son, right? Are you my son? You know, asking over and over and over again, but still helping them. You know, really emotional, right? I thought this is very beautiful and heartfelt and something that, you know, so many people go through. So great job, Cedar. Beautiful.
Great comment, Dan. Great comment. And Lulu, how about you, hon?
I thought this was a beautifully, deeply sad right and loving tribute to his father. And I agree with Dan. You know, I took care of my grandmother, and she had, you know, health problems, but she also had dementia. And, you know, sometimes she recognized this, sometimes she didn't. And, you know, I could literally hear, you know, see him sitting with his father and, you know, the father questioning, "Are you my son?" Because, you know, they have issues with memory loss. And, you know, and of course, you know, what I'm wondering is, he said, you know, it made me wonder if this is the different little talks that he had with his dad, or, you know, even whether he said it out loud or in remembrance, "Are you my son?" And he would answer him, and then he would remind him what had gone on, like with the bone broth, with him holding him tight in the darkest of night. And when he needed him, you know, when he had accidents, and, you know, it is just so hard. And then, you know, where he brings out that he asks him, "Is your son again?" And then he starts, you know, talking to him. And, of course, now he's gotten older and there's different issues and different problems. But what he says is in the end is that, you know, he wants his father to rest, you know, and that he taught him all these lessons throughout his life to guide him in his relationships, and I thought this was deeply beautiful.
Nice comment, Lou. Well done. Gray, how about you?
Yeah, you know, I thought it was beautiful as he expressed his guiding his father into the hereafter. You know, it's a very touching picture that's painted there. So, what incredible, right? Evoking a lot of emotions.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I agree with all of you. I mean, it was a wonderful write. I thought it was just, the emotions were so well expressed throughout, and a great job of hearing how he captured the situation and wrote it down for all of us. You know, I worked in long-term care all my life. And, you know, people that have Alzheimer's or dementia or organic brain syndrome, whatever you want to call it, you know, there's so many variations on that. you know, you can see that in them. You know, someone will ask you your name like 15 times, you know, in the course of a 1-8-hour shift. You know, what's your name again? You know, so, I mean, it's very relatable to me in that respect. It's never easy when it's your own relative. You know, I could be at work 365 days a year, and no way would that compare to taking care of my mother here for 2 years. Never. Never. It's just a whole different set of emotions. And I think that he really captured that whole situation and put it out in a way that everyone can understand, you know, how that really kind of does feel, you know. But wonderful job, Peter Chapman, and thank you so much for sharing with us. I appreciate it. Good. Let me see now. Now, Lee, I have a poem for you by E.J. Cole called Ache.
Okay, it is my honor. She has a SoundCloud.
For this one? Oh, wait.
For this one on the bottom?
I may actually have one for this. I have one there. I think she's got two poems left, so my bad. Let me just look.
Okay.
Okay, let me do that. And then, see, I'll get you the next one, Liz. Say sorry, Sally.
Okay.
Okay.
Sorry.
Go for it, EJ. No, I'm sorry.
By EJ Cole. You are worth every splinter and every shard of glass embedded in my white phosphorus matchbook striker skin. Your buffeting excoriation lights my penumbral universe. I take each gift of pain with a grateful grin, then ask for more again and again. Every thorn, every fractured bone, and every salt-cured tear shed alone, unknown. You ascend transcendence, the north star of my patchwork sky, a mercurial whirlwind of concentrated energy, singing to me of heaven and of hell. With such divinity, I ache for death.
Ouch. Great job, EJ. Thank you for that sample. Do you want to start us off on this one?
You know, I thought this was beautifully penned. You know, when we ache, in some ways that pain tends to help us grow and learn. And, you know, what it also teaches us is it also teaches us that when we suffer and somebody shows us the same compassion and the same love, especially if we haven't received it before. I really loved where she says here, EJ says here, I take each gift of pain with a grateful grin and ask for more again and again. You know, and there's just something about when we find that person, or we, you know, or we learn and grow within ourselves, our souls tend to transcend if we allow it to happen. And then, you know, and it allows us to see different lights in different areas. I thought this was not only beautifully written, I felt the emotion that she had here, and I love this poem by EJ.
Nice comment, though. And Gray, how about you, hon?
I thought you did a wonderful read on it, you know, and I agree with Lee's comment about really liking that stanza where she says, I take each gift of pain with a grateful grin, then ask for more again and again. You know, it was a beautiful write with an excellent read as well. I really like the imagery in it, you know, USN transcendence, the north star of my patchwork sky, a mercurial whirlwind of concentrated energy singing to me of heaven and of hell. With such divinity, I ache for death. Yeah, just a beautiful, beautiful poem.
Nice. Nice comment, Greg. And Daniel, how about you?
Yeah, EJ has a real deep way of creating understanding. This, as Chance will take it, is actually, she actually wrote this for a contest of mine about, I always do mine with pictures that I take, and I call it the Art of Dark and Light, which I just named things, but it was basically kind of a very dark cloud with the sun behind it. So the way I'm really taking this is kind of that back and forth of love, happiness, and pain and torture, where it can all kind of go together. So I wonder, you know, what specifically she was thinking of with this. At first I thought it was, you know, she's thinking of an actual person and how much pain and anguish the person causes. But, you know, sometimes if you love a person, right, you're that can transcend that, and it still makes you stay with them. But then it could just be kind of life itself. It could be talking almost about what we did the last poem, where it was, where you're talking about your own, you know, life. She's talking about life itself. You're worth every splinter, every shard of grass embedded. But then eventually, you know, you see the world kind of singing of heaven. You know, take me to death now. I'm ready. You know, to you know, keep going with the pain and get towards divinity. And that's what I find about EJ's poems, is that you can really get multiple layers out of them. So beautiful job, EJ, and I really like this. I like, again, the fact of how there is, you know, that you, to me, is not well-defined, and you can kind of take it in different ways. So that's what I really liked about this.
Right. It was a great poem. I think you guys all, you know, really hit the nail on the head. You know, I thought it was very nicely penned, and I thought it was well expressed. You know, it's hard to experience pain and still keep coming back for more and more and more. And anyone who's ever been in one of those relationships, thank God not everybody has. You know, when you're in something and it's not working and it hurts, and, you know, but you still keep coming back thinking, It's going to get better. And, you know, as time goes on, you realize things just aren't changing. You know, and that's an interesting kind of situation. And I'm not sure that that's where EJ was going in this, you know. It's because that last stanza just kind of changes up on me. And I go, okay, you know, you ascend transcendence. The north star of my patchwork sky, a material whirlwind of concentrated energy, singing to me of heaven and of hell. With such divinity, I ache for death. It's you know, maybe just, you know, about a loss, you know, and that thought of heaven and hell, you know, after a loss of sorts. You know, it makes you just say, wow, why do I keep going back for more and more and more? You know, I don't know, but I think it was very well done. I think the imagery was great in this, and I think that it just really, I don't know, it's something to think about for sure, you know, because you can think of it on one level and then another, and I think that makes it a wonderful piece.
Yeah, you know, and sometimes the relationships don't have to be bad to be painful, right? If you're seeing a loved one, you know, going, you know, you have a great relationship, but then all of a sudden this person is extremely hurt or going through something horrible, and you got to stay with them, and that's horribly painful. And you know, like it says in the first stanza, you're worth every splinter, every shard of glass, right? So it's still worth it, you know, to stay with you and be with you during the hard times. So, yeah, there's definitely a lot of layers and different ways to think about this. I agree.
You're absolutely right there, Dan. You really are. You know, as I was saying, you look at it from one angle, and then the next thing you know, you have to go back and kind of rethink it again on a different level. And, yeah, if you go back to the very beginning, you know, it's a whole different thing. But it's very well done, definitely. So thank you, EJ, for sharing that with us. Absolutely. Yes. Amazing. Okay, let's see now. What do I have here? Okay. Lou, I promise you the next one. And here we go. This one is by Rhonda Yashri. So here we go.
Okay.
Whenever you're ready.
Orphic Sunset by Rhonda Yashri. The sun winds on the horizon's gift. Gondola, elaborate a candlelit cruise. Improvise a dulcet, slow-paced nocturne with some cordial musical extravaganza from her greatest hit. The catchy chorus of the most striking whistling catamaran swans sailing the lake's piano prime musical notation leaves hypnotic soaring melodies blend perfectly with Dove's harmonic background bassoon hum. The ravishing solo ballerina, Pink Flamingo, dazzlingly pirouettes to show off her gracious twinkle toes. Amity coaxes sentiments to let go and allow themselves to fall in love's exalted harmonious touch as in a spiritual message. An unbridled vitality of the swaying breezes, lyrical lyric symphonies, that pour forth ecstasy's stirring song to the rapture of the amorous couple. End poem.
Nice read, Lo. Nice read. Let's see. Dan, do you want to start us off on this one?
Sure, absolutely. yeah, so I thought this was a great. I'm assuming this is a description of the picture, which is really beautiful. I love when there's colors like this. And I really like the musical. You know, it reminds me of so many different things. You know, it reminds me a lot of classical music. You listen to Beethoven, Mozart, and they're talking about all the different, you know, musical, including just melodies in general, or even ballerinas, right? The ravishing solo ballerina, Pink Flamingo. And you could just kind of see soundtracks sometimes, right? Again, Beethoven and Mozart and other classical symphonic composers would see that. You can see it even in modern music. If you guys know who the band Mannheim Steamroller is, one of my favorites, and some of their early stuff is just so descriptive, and it's all instrumental of nature and of sight. So I thought this is really interesting, as it both told a story, and it really had that just great musical and sight, mixture together. Just a great job. Each stanza was beautiful and worthy of the painting. So nice job, Rhonda.
Nice comment, Dan. And Gray, how about you, hon?
I thought you did a beautiful job reading that to you, and it was a wonderful, right? You know, she really paints that picture into her poetry, and, you know, it's captivating right from the opening stanza to the final stanza, where it says, an unbridled vitality of the swaying breezes, lyrical lyre, leery, symphonies that pour forth ecstasies, stirring song to the rapture of the amorous couple. You know, just a beautiful, beautiful poem.
Absolutely. Great job, Gray. And Luya, what do you have to say here?
You know, this was very musical. I loved, you know, like what everybody's bringing out. You could just hear the symphonies and music playing. And, you know, so many of the songs ballerina song for They're on Their Tiptoes. I thought that she brought that out so beautifully in the ravishing solo, ballerina pink, flamingo, dazzling pirouette to show off her gracious twinkle toes. And, you know, Disney has done so many musicals with these beautiful, you know, beautiful animals and flowers and trees dancing. And I thought that she caught this beautifully in this love symphony that she painted here.
Nice. Nice comment, though. Yeah, I thought this was full of lovely imagery and great musical references throughout. And I thought it was just a wonderful take on that poem. I think that the poem really captured the image, and I think that the image really is reflected in the piece. So that doesn't always happen, you know. She didn't just sit there and say, oh, and the sun was setting, you know, and the swan was swimming. Like, it wasn't like that. It was a whole different, it really is a whole different set of visuals, and it's definitely a standalone piece, but a wonderful reflection of that poem. So wonderful job, and thank you so much, Yolanda. Thanks for sharing with us, as always. Okey-doke. Now, let me see where we go. Okay. The next one I'm going to put up is poem by Mamiya. And I'm going to give that a read. Okay. One lives only long enough to be the villain in one's own story. By Mamiya. I began from light, but now I walk in darkness, bound by chains of my own design. I chip away from these bindings with teeth of iron. My gums and my wrists bleed, and I taste metal in my mouth. Thus, unbound, I release my anger into the sparkling ether, drawing the darkness down upon one and all. So take in and drink the sour wine I made, the slow poison, and die with me. End quote. Liu, how about you? You want to start us off?
Yeah, you know, this poem is very painful as it is relatable. You know, sometimes the things that we've been told in our lives tends to sometimes settle in on dark days where we tend to beat ourselves up. And we believe, even though it's not true, we believe these terrible images and things that we have been told. And then, you know, sometimes it just, you know, it just bottles up in us, and annoyingly, some of it can seep out and we can, you know, hurt others or, you know, make others feel uncomfortable. And, you know, sometimes that's when we're, like she brings out here, so take in and drink the sour wine I made, this slow poison, and die with me. You know, and sometimes it just bleeds out. And, you know, I don't know, but, you know, there has been times where, you know, you just feel like dying. With everything that has gone on in your life, but, you know, hopefully she'll, you know, I hope she's not still in that dark area, but if she is, sending you lots of love and kisses, Mamiya. Love you, Christine.
Nice comment, love. And Gray, how about you?
Yeah, I just wanted to say that was a beautiful comment, Mamiya. And, you know, I thought the poem was dark, engaging, and just a powerful write as on the subject of us being our own worst enemy and wanting the world to come down with us. So just an absolutely haunting and gripping poem.
Right.
You did a beautiful job on it as well, Phil.
Thank you. And Daniel?
Mamiya's one of my favorite ones. She really always makes me think, and when I, especially when I hear her talk about her poems, it's there's always just parts of it that I didn't necessarily see. Like she has so many layers, you know. And to me, this is about basically just what we do to ourselves throughout our lives. You know, we can be our own worst enemies, right? Think about us when you were older, you know, all the abuse that you did to your body, whether it was, you know, not eating right or not exercising enough or not sleeping or whatever you did, it catches up with you at the end of your lifetime, right? So you can be your own worst enemy and be your own villain. And just the way she kind of almost said that, like almost like she's kind of killing herself as she just kind of, you know, lives and does things throughout life. So I began from light, but walking darkness, bound by chains of my own design, chip away from these bindings with teeth of iron, and then you can taste the metal in your mouth as you bleed. So really interesting, and the way she was able to pack that into a, you know, kind of short poem was very impressive. So beautiful job, ma'am. Yeah, I like it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It was a great remedy. You know, I think it was well done, and they're painful words there. I mean, but that final stanza, to take in and drink the sour wine I made, the slow poison and die with me. You know, it's kind of like, you know, I've created this. I've made it what it is. And come on, you know, join me. It's you know, there's no going back from here. And that's kind of a you know, terrible outlook, I guess, you know, in that last stanza, you know, I mean, it's when we create things, it's like you make your bed and you lie in it kind of thing is basically what comes to my mind. And it makes it kind of, kind of hits home when you get to that last stanza. Not that the rest of it doesn't, but I think that, yeah, I always look at the last stanza because it's always like tying it up, you know, getting those loose ends and putting them all together. And I think Manuel really did that with this one in particular. So nice work, Christine, and thank you so much for sharing with us all. Great piece. You know, painful though. Borderline brutal.
Yeah, it's very... Yeah, it's very dark. I don't know what the hell happened to everybody this week, but there's a lot of dark poems coming on tonight. Must have been a rough week for everybody. everybody's getting it all out on the show tonight, you know. So hey, that's what we're for, right? We're therapy. Get it
well,
all
this
out.
This show always cracks me up. Never know what you're gonna get, you know. Some nights it's all happiness and your thing, and other nights it's all dark. Sometimes you get both, and it's kind of like, wow, you talk about the vicissitudes of life. We can run them all on Friday. And it's interesting how that happens, you know, most definitely. Okay,
Tonya.
The next piece I have on the book is by Luke J.R., and I do have an audio for that. So let me put that one up. And this is called Vivisceptive. Never mind. You can all read it for yourself because I can't pronounce it. Unless, Dan, you want to give it a try, you're welcome to.
Vivisceptive, is that it?
There you go. Sounded good when you said it. It sounded pretty jumbled when I did. Oh, and we have company. Oh, I believe Rex is joining us. Rex, is that
me?
Yeah, I woke up.
Oh, well, welcome to the party.
Hey, sexy Rexy.
Hey, Rex.
Yes.
How you doing, guys?
Good to have you, hon. I'm just glad you're all right. That was my only concern.
Always good to wake up better than the alternative.
Amen. Yep.
There's one aspect of Manuel's piece that you didn't hear or didn't think of.
Oh, what's that?
If you think about it, this is the one backstory, the opening lead-in, which creates each and every superhero. Begin from light, but now walk in darkness. This is Batman.
Interesting. Interesting. That, you know, she does have so many layers. That's a good one. I like that one.
Very cool, very cool. Okay, well, I'm going to put up Luke's audio now, and we'll figure out. And where were you when they needed someone to pronounce that word, Rex? Dan did it. Thank God, Dan did
it. Give us the poster.
It's all a bunch of show-offs. Okay, here we go.
Vivisa pulcher, volplane. Red fluorescent hue causes stillness in the backdrop. Red like mist. While audience continues to scream in excitement, some are missed. Many countless hands feeling the rhythm within the musical place. Others seeing blurred visions of a very unfriendly distilled face. Looking up the ceiling lights, holding two sticks frantically for the night. Jawline on show, away we go, drums kicking into higher pace with powerful tension. Crowd going crazy with so much motion, there's no possibility or sign of emotion. Crowd surfing is not to be seen, red mist takes over this dimly moonlit scene. Dark wavy hair, feeling excited, jumping frantically with the crowd screaming. Adrenaline driven motion in his hands, blood rushing onto the stage, beaming. Crowd continues waving their hands in anticipation for more disfigured animation. Blurriness fills the eyes of those that taken too much to drink. With all this chaos and commotion, it would make you think twice. With all this chaos and random emotion, it would roll like a dice. All on stage behave the way they should, and the crowd goes crazy under the hood. Glowing retention dims the outside like transparent smoky blood. The music fills the spaces where people in the crowd had hidden their faces. We were now seeing more hands than face taken away to unsettled places. And onwards the stage goers went, drums beating with adrenaline-pumped rage. Many hands now swaying side to side, and the crowd was becoming the side stage. The adrenaline for the crowd traveled like an earthquake crash. And many gathered together, watching on as the stage lit up with brightness. Flashes of light from time to time, like a storm that was near but not quite on time. Quite frantic. Quite moving, and the drums kept clashing forwards onto the ceiling.
Wow. Great piece. Lex, you want to do the comments, or you want me to?
Oh, I'm sorry. Gray, why don't you kick us off, please?
Sorry, let me just unmute myself halfway through my comment. But no, he did an excellent job on the SoundCloud itself. His read was theatrical and it was engaging. I mean, you know, it had an excellent, really good flow to the poem as well, and the storyline just went fantastically, joyously through the poem, and carried right through this concert of madness. Beautiful job, Luke.
Thank you, Gray. And Lou, how about you?
You know, he's talking about being buried alive. You know, I could literally see this crowd and the music and the build-up. You know, it just starts off slow. And with his metaphors and imagery, it just pulls you in. And that excitement, the thrill that the crowd feels, you know, you could just see the crowd screaming and, you know, and he brings it out here, adrenaline-driven motion in his hands, blood rushing on the stage, beaming. Crowds continue waving their hands in anticipation.
you know, and you could just see, you know, how it, you know, how the change as the music picks up, the more, you know, I really liked where he talked about you could no longer see the faces, but you would only see the hands, and you could just hear the drums clashing on the ceiling. I just, it just was just fantastic, wonderful imagery.
Thank you, Lou. And Dan, how about you?
This is very interesting, I thought. So from what I can get, what like what Lou said, vivisepulture means being buried alive, and Vulpain is talking more about birds kind of flying. And to me, this is almost talking about like a concert is what this is looking. It's not, it's describing a story, but it's more kind of describing a feeling of being somewhere. And he keeps talking about kind of drums and everybody getting excited and jumping frantically with the crowd screaming, adrenaline-driven motion, his hands, blood rushing to the stage, beaming. Crowd continues to wave their hands in anticipation for more disfigured animation. Almost kind of sounds to me like a crazy like crowd for whatever wherever they are in a concert or just some sort of gathering. So possibly the idea of the mob, you know, and being kind of almost buried alive. When you're in a mob, you're almost kind of not a person anymore. You're buried in it. But then the mob itself, the feeling of it can kind of fly off and take on its own. So I think there's a lot of real depth into this in a lot of different ways. Again, you can take it. So this is very interesting and worth multiple reads, I think.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Dan. And Jean, how about you?
Well, you know, I have to agree with Dan because I was looking at it myself and it's being buried alive and talking about planes, but it's gliding with the engine off towards the earth. And, you know, I was looking at that, and I'm reading this, and I'm not seeing that in particular. But I was going, okay. And I have to agree that it felt like, you know, he was buried in the crowd at this concert. I guess really the best word for it. The only one that suited it to me. But then I look at the there's more of this rhyme, love, family, nature, hope, and death. What a combination. So, you know, I can kind of get a little lost in there, but I can only see it as being buried in the crowd, you know, maybe lost in the crowd, you know, maybe losing yourself in the crowd. I'm not exactly sure, but definitely, you know, full of wonderful imagery. You know, it's very descriptive when he writes. And I think that is pretty cool, actually. So nice work on that, Luke Jr., and thanks for sharing with us. It was something to think
woo-hoo,
about.
Somebody agreed with me. I'm excited.
I did.
That never happened.
Write that on the calendar.
I got to mark this red letter day.
Oh, my God. Okay.
Oh, there is a note to that getting lost in the crowd, but it kind of goes a little deeper because of the red mist and the blood that flows throughout this. Death certainly walks into it. There's almost a note to vampirism, others seeing blurred visions of a very unfriendly, distilled face. There's a nice dark imitation to that, which kind of hits on the sort of meeting your maker in that moment, which kind of hits on the thought of maybe a vampiristic entity walking through and taking those at will, because he hits on another person. There's a thought of we were now seeing more hands and face taken away to unsettled places. There's a burying angle, sort of, but also empty spaces where once people stood, but nobody's really noticing the missing because they're too excited with the concert itself, or maybe it's the thought of that musical sound which is driving everyone crazy. But there's had me thinking of Lestat from Interview with the Vampire series, there's a note to the ease with walking into that kind of a crowd and taking it well and not being noticed in the moment. All right, Kane, we're back on you.
Okay. Okie doke. Gray, I'm going to put the next one up for you, hon, and then I got a couple of audios. So. Here we go. Whenever you're ready.
No way, forget it. I'm not doing it. Joking. Oh, it was Gray. I'm sorry. And I was making a joke and everything. Did you say Gray or Dan?
I said Gray.
See, then it was Gray, right? Okay. All right, then, hey, I'm not doing it. There you go. So there.
Okay.
That was right.
All right, so this is by Jack Tomkovic, and it's called Raskin Jamie. You, the full measure poured to the brim. A cup of bitter herbs, the strongest, turns from hornets, wasps, viper fangs, or flesh wounds. A man can stand and rise for family and country, bloody, scarred, but unbowed. Job 2.0, a true title you did not campaign for. Hung no banners, gave no fiery speeches, cut no TV ads. Didn't ask the big guy to throw dice over the pots that stripes. Reach out arms for this cross. Are you to saw the wood and hammer the nails too? End poem.
And great read, author, Dan. Thank you, Dave. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
In his author's notes, he says, I'm reading Representative Raskin's book, Unthinkable, about his son's suicide, followed by directing the second impeachment of Trump. So powerful, a father's love for his dead son, a patriot's love for his wounded country. Highly recommended this book. Bring Kleenex. So that's what the prompt was.
Great read. Thank you very much. And Lulu, why don't you kick us off?
And Gray did a fantastic job in reading this poem by Jack Tomkovic, Raskin Jamie. You know, this is so deeply sad, you know, to have somebody write a book about the things that have been happening lately, how, you know, these things that we go, you know, you're fighting for your country, you're trying to do your 2.0 job, your title. You know, nobody was expecting this whole mess from 221 to 220 to just erupt, but it did. And, you know, I can imagine how hard it was for this poor man to go to work, to do his job, and then dealing with the suicide of his son, you know, standing up for his son, standing up for his country, how torn he must have been. You know, and it says, you know, reach out arms for this cross. Are you? To saw the wood and hammer the nails to, you know, just the total impact of everything where it's just, you know, do you understand what I'm going through? So let me explain. In his autobiography, this was beautifully penned, as it is deeply sad if you know the background.
Thank you very much, Lou. And Dan, how about you?
This is definitely interesting, and you know, what a rough time. I mean, being in the United States myself, you know, been here for 50-plus years, and, you know, the country's really a mess, and it's been that way for a long time now, since Trump started even his campaign. Now, I don't want to get political here, but, and then, you know, mm-hmm. having to watch the country just fall apart and still be a mess the way it is now and have all these personal things happening to you too, especially losing a son or you know, the suicide. I mean, you're just watching everything fall apart, you know, for family and country, bloody, scarred, and unbowed. You know, it's just, it is a tough thing, and how do you go on? Right. So, you know, it is very, 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 you know, very interesting, and how we do keep going on through all this. You know, I guess hope is the way. So, and he says that in his, you know, in some of his, two of his prompts are hope and love. So, you know, very, very interesting, very well done.
Thank you, Dan. And Gray, you got to read it. How about you?
You know, I thought it was a evocative poem on the topic. You know, it's filled with powerful sentiment throughout, and it's definitely deeply engaging and hard-hitting as well. So well done, Jess.
Thank you, Gray. Jean, how about you?
Well, yeah, I think Jack did a great job with his piece. I think that he kind of introduced us all to the thought and the book itself that he referenced in his AN. And I think that, as always, you know, he's very direct and to the point with what he wants to get across. So excellent job, Jack, and thanks for being on the show. Now, before we go any further, we have another caller, Emiliana, I believe. If I pronounce it correctly.
Oh, yeah. Welcome. Sorry. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Hi.
Yes, we can.
Oh.
Did you have
Hi, Emiliana.
Read the last poem we put up, Emiliana?
Yeah. No, Emiliana, yeah, is the name. You can also just shorten it to Emmy. That works. I was kind of stuck on the last two stanzas because I thought the rhythm of them was actually really quite awesome. Like, for instance, reach out arms for this cross. I thought normally I would see, like, reach out, but in this case it was just reach out arms for this cross, which actually changes the entire meaning of it through the line break, essentially. And then there's are you, and then a break to saw the wood and hammer the nails. I think, like, when it comes to, like, using rhyme schemes specifically for, like, effect, I think this poem really, really nails that. So, yeah, that was my bit.
Excellent. Great comments, everybody. And, Jean, we're coming back to you.
Did you comment, Rex?
Excuse me?
Did you comment?
Back to you, yes.
You usually comment. I'm so confused. I must be lost. That's what I need to do. Okay, here we go. I'm going to put the next piece up by these little things.
Darkness is all around me, filled with the sound of wild wind. I long to be as one with it, carried aloft, taken away from this hell. Against my will, tensions build, tendrils of desire are quickening. Sensitivity induces in me a frenzied need to touch and be touched. I know you are near. I forget the pain. I'm engulfed with longing. How cruel it is to hide in the shadows, withholding what I crave. Your power over me is absolute, but you know that. You can scar, lift me, drop me to the depths. And with one light stroke, you'll see, ignited in me is a wanton, depraved desire for you to inflict both pleasure and pain. You're not a drug I'm addicted to. You're all of me. Without you, I would be a mewling, needy mess. But that is your aim. I've accepted your dictates so far because there has been no choice. Dragged down by my weak, desperate body's incessant demands. Now I've become used to the bright silver path of your blade on my skin. Something more reciprocal is needed. I want some power in my hands. Naked and chained, half-starved, time is short. Then I hear your steps. you won't give, I'll have to take. But I am becoming weaker by the day. You lift me. That's a mistake. As fingernails grown long on idle hands dig deep into your flat, dead eyes. You scream, try to drop me. I cling on. My teeth open your throat. Warm blood fills me as I drink your life away.
Great read, Weaver. Thank you for the sound cloud. It is very much appreciated. Boy, that was two-toned and deliberate. What do you think, Lou? Are you new, Katie?
Can you hear me, Rexy? Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
I thought this was a fantastic poem by Weaver of Dreams. Just like her title, Enthralled, I was enthralled from the first stanza to the last stanza, you know, where, you know you're in darkness, you know, and you feel it and you're sinking. And, you know, you can't say no to this person no matter what they do, how bad they treat us. She says right here, I know you are near. I forget the pain. I'm engulfed with longing. You know, that withholding and wanting so much, and you not, it's just like being like a mouse that is almost starved to death. You just feed it enough to barely keep it alive. And that's what he's doing. He's just giving, you know, just giving in. She wants it. The thing is that she craves it, and she knows. It's kind of like knowing this is bad for me, but it needs to sustain you. And in that ending stanza where it's just where you just, there's almost nothing left of you. You just finally find the courage, the darkness, the depth, the desire, all the pain of longing. Just finally, you just dig those nails in, and you're not going to let go. And even when he tries to move, which I love this, you lift me, not as a mistake, as fingernails grown long on idle hands, dig deep in your flat, dead eyes. You scream, try to drop me. And this is where I just like, she goes, I cling on. My teeth open your throat. Warm blood fills me as I drink your life away. What more can you say?
You enjoyed that a bit too much there, Lou. Do we need to pay attention?
Fantastic.
Oh, thank you very much, Lou. Gray, how about you?
You know, her read is fantastic on this. I really liked hearing her read this. But, you know, it reads like it's Stockholm Syndrome at first, and then it ends with her taking her freedom at the cost of her kidnapper's life. So it was just an absolutely fascinating poem, engaging and endearing.
Thank you, Greg. And Emiliana, how about you?
Oh, sorry. I was going to say that I like the active voice that we use primarily. I noticed that kind of in the middle, but I think it really takes effect towards like the end where it says like, my teeth open your throat. Warm blood fills me, which is just a different way of phrasing it that sort of makes it like really punchy and like hard hitting, and I thought that was really effective.
Excellent, thank you very much. And Dan, how about you?
Yeah, so I got kicked out for a minute. I missed some of the other comments, but I thought this is really amazing. I mean, on the outside, it could be a just a story of a vampire, right? That's you know, seducing somebody and then kind of, you know, jumps on them. But I think it's more about just seduction and desire in general, where, you know, your darkness all around me, filled with the wind, I long to be as one with it, carried aloft, taken away from this hell, and insensitivity induces me into a frenzy. I need to be touched. I need to be, I need to be touched. And there, you're getting in there. And at the end, you know, she's more like almost mad of the addiction, you know, of the addiction of seduction. So it's almost a dark way of thinking about it, but really, really interesting. And I've written about that before too, where, you know, when you're a child, when you're younger and you don't have those desires, you know, once you have them, that's it. You're done for the rest of your life. You have these desires and you can't kind of get out of it. You know, you're always, you know, have this attraction. And if you find somebody you really like, it just kind of grows and grows to the point where it can be something where you almost feel like your life is taken and controlled by desire. So a lot going on here, and really well done and beautifully read. So I thought this is a lot happening here at once, which was great. Not in a bad way, in a very composed, almost like a really good chef, you know, combines a lot of ingredients to have one beautiful thing. So yeah, nice job, Weaver. As always, Weaver's great.
Well said. I like that. There is a note of sterile ferocity in this, and it does hit on those notes of because that whole middle section from the halfway through the first stanza down through, it walks in that note of deep sensuous tone, but it does add a touch of darkness to it. So that need, that crave. Well, I guess you know what, you hit on something there, Dan. You hit on the right words to it. Thank you. And Jean, okay. How about you?
Well, you know, Weaver, boy, I'll tell you, she can tell a tale. She really can. But, you know, Lou, you might agree with me on this. She kind of reminds me of the female version of Robert when she tells her story. When she reads, she draws you in completely. You know what I'm saying? Like we said earlier, you know, when he reads, you listen and you kind of become part of it. You believe it. It's not like it's some kind of fantasy, which although we know it's not, it just is convincing. And Weaver tells a story in that same fashion. When you listen to her, it's kind of like, okay, where's she going? And, you know, what a twist at the end here, because I wasn't expecting, because she was making longing and wanting this person, and then in the end, boy, she was his demise. But I think it was just a wonderful job, amazing work, and yeah, I loved it. I thought it was really well done. So thank you very much, Kate. Good stuff. Okay, so you ready for me, Max?
Sure.
I don't want to get lost and way ahead. Oh, God, here we go. The next one I'm going to put up is another audio. And there's that button. Okay, and this is Never Sleep Again, Sleeping Beauty Audio Drama Part 9 by We Are All Gone Girl. That button. Here we go.
Although Sleepy's chance circumstance may make it seem as if her advanced trance-like state could precipitate a semblance of remembrance, she didn't. No thought echoed in her mind for the first time in many nights. She did not dream about her loss. She did not dream about the fight. She did not dream about love at all costs. She just let the darkness swirl inside.
Please, darling, I've waited 5 years. Another 5 minutes simply won't do.
Sleepy's eyes tried to pry themselves wide, but the blood flow supplied was internally denied. She felt the welt develop on the back of her head, and in that moment she felt content to be dead. Queen had snuck behind, taking advantage of Sleepy's shock. Too simple would it be, it seems, to pass through the door unlocked. Luckily, the blow, as dazing as it seemed, only left superficial wounds, and soon she could see. Most in that moment would break down and cry, her mind festering and turbid. Never once did Sleepy wonder why. She only ever asked if he did.
Did you ever love me?
Of course he didn't, you ugly little piglet. He wanted a real woman.
Charming, and the queen's lips pressed for a passionate kiss before starting again, torturing Sleepy's soul far worse than the bullets that pierced her skin. Magic mirrors stared, eyes wincing and furrowed, shining behind the traitorous duo in the glass atop the lofty bureau. Mind racing, pacing memories quite thorough, she couldn't find the words to speak, instead the words she'd borrow.
You can have the kingdom, I just want...
to win, and I win. I won. I took the throne from your naive father, and now I'm giving it to a real man.
Yes, ma'am. Oh, let the guards know about our little visitor, just in case he slips away again. Ooh, and darling?
Yes?
Bring the wine.
You are delectable.
Indeed, my love.
The queen strolled out of the room, closing the door shut, giving privacy to the two. As the fog lifted, Sleepy's gaze sifted for a weapon fate gifted so she could slay her lover twisted. Charming knew her simple plans, so he palmed his hilt inside his hand.
I absolutely love to hate that woman. The second we are married, I'm gonna wrap my hands around her frail, decrepit neck and snap it like a cracker. I see 10 steps ahead, which is why you'll find this room is woefully empty.
Sleepy's disgust and rage ignited.
Please tell me you're not this short-sighted. Do you think the people will celebrate a king who murdered his wife?
No, but they would celebrate a man avenging his lost love.
Charming spoke of his plan at hand, although not grand, would secure himself the land. Suspiciously, a package of great value will be delivered to the houses of prominence. Evidence of the queen's involvement in Sleepy's demise, as well as the queen's dreams of dominance. Charming explained with a pained expression.
You awoke and came home to find the queen had married your love. You revealed the ugly truth about what happened. The queen attacked you in a fit of rage, and seeing you die by the queen's hands, your dedicated, loving former suitor, me, would have no choice but to react with violence, especially after the queen manages to finish the job, and, you know, kill you. Or so they'll think. I grow tired of this oppressive state, and when the people find out how I've been betrayed, they will beg me. Bend a knee. Be our king.
Inside herself, Sleepy felt something worse, more queer than the mere damage dealt as she struggled to stand. Falling, she knelt, bended knee as if to beg to the mirror himself.
You seriously knew this whole time?
Ah, sorry, kid. These are the breaks. What makes any difference? I didn't tell you because...
I just wanted to see the look on your face. Charming smiled, beguiled by the mirror's cruel tactics, all the while cackling over Sleepy's plan, believing it lacking.
But, if there is a but...
I also didn't tell the queen or Charming about our plan.
Our?
You can't be serious. I'm on the eve of becoming king. I have soldiers. I have assassins. I have vast amount of wealth and power backing me. You have a treacherous mirror feeding you lies. And I'm supposed to be afraid? It took you nearly a month just to get caught.
It didn't take me a month to plan this. This is not the plan. There is no plan. Suicide missions don't require a whole lot of planning. I thought you were dead. My plan was to come here for all of this. I wanted it all pulled down, one by one.
Sleepy stood tall, ignoring her aches, cracking a smile as Charming's hand began to quake.
I want to pull it down, brick by brick.
Charming stood aloof with a goofy look upon his face, so Sleepy saved him some grace. She took a step forward in his direction, calmly speaking with a quiet expression. Sleepy's hand stretched across the etched stone gloss that sat atop crisscross stone and chisel designs she had missed more than she could combine.
It's time.
The future king's ignorance was clearly presented by an icy cold stare at the two he resented.
Time for what, your master plan?
Sleepy tilted her head towards the ceiling before a maddening sound sent the mercenaries reeling. A feeling of total loss descended over the castle, even with this army. Charming was not ready for this battle.
I have everything. The crown, the kingdom, the army. What could a pathetic girl like you possibly do to stop me?
Me? Nothing. But she sure as hell can.
I am the god of hellfire, and I bring you...
Fire. I'll send you to burn.
Oh, great read there, Gonzo. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And Gene, you want to lead us?
Well, I don't know. I'm ready for, like, I want the next piece already. It's killing me.
I know.
I'm trying to figure out I mean, it just gets more and more intriguing each time we hear it. Last week, it led us to believe one completely different direction. And here we are this week going, wow, really? Yeah, I want to know who she is. Gosh, dang it. But definitely a well-thought-out piece again. And a great addition to the story. You know, the plot thickens, as they say. And,
yeah,
sooner or later, we're going to find it. We're going to find
I think
out.
Red might be coming back in.
Yeah, yeah. Excellent. Excellent job.
Oh, it is. And Gray, how about you?
Yeah, you know, I thought it was an epic, right? You know, with an epic read as well. It's just such an impressive poem. Filled with incredible imagery, and the storyline is just so engaging throughout. It really carries you aloft into this make-believe world that he's created. And but I, you know, I just thought it was fabulous.
Excellent, thank you, Gray. Emiliana, how about you?
Well, I didn't know if there was a lot I could say because I haven't read any of the others, and honestly, that's like the first time I've ever heard something like that. But I did find the internal rhyme to be pretty impressive in some parts. Just like those his plan, though not grand, would secure himself the land. For instance, I thought was very like clever, and so that was pretty funny. It seemed like a pretty like a quirky little story, but I feel like I'm missing a lot of context at the same time. So yeah.
Thank you. And Liu, how about you?
Going along with Amelia, this is the first time I've heard this storyline, even though we are familiar with the storyline. What I liked was how he infused the different personalities and temperaments into each of the characters into the story that we're familiar with, the Charming, the Queen, the Mirror, you know, Sleeping Beauty. I really loved it. It was just like a roller coaster ride all the way through. Like right here, I just thought like, oh my God. So she says that Sleepy says, you seriously knew this whole time? And the Mirror answers her, oh, sorry, kid. These are the breaks, but if it makes any difference, I didn't tell you because I just wanted to see the look on your face. And I was going, damn, that's cruel and wow. You know, you know, and it just continues to move forward. And then at the end, you know, which I'm going to have to go catch up on this series, but, you know, just like, you know, he's charming, thinking he has everything. And, you know, he says, you know, what are you going to do? You know, Charming tells her, what are you going to do? You know, and it's so personal because it matches a lot of personalities we see today. And it also matches the personalities of the fairy tales and the fables that have been told. And then she answers him, but she sure as hell can. And then you hear that song with fire. And so I'm just wondering, did it consume him? What happened next? But it left you hanging for the next one. So this was just awesome. Awesome all the way through.
Thank you, Lou. And Dan, how about you?
I tried to, you know, what to say with these. I've heard, I don't know if I've heard all of them, but I've certainly heard multiple. And it's a whole radio play as a cast of characters. You've got music, sound effects. I mean, it's, you know, beyond usually what we hear. So it's so much fun and beautifully done. You know, again, not much to say to add to it. It speaks for itself. Just so much fun. It'd be great to have her put them all together. I mean, he could have a whole play by the time he's done here. So awesome job, man.
Oh, absolutely. Last week I thought it was it ran across as a dream sequence. In sleep. This week, there's a whole different twist to it. And considering what's coming down the end, I'm wondering if Red is coming back into the picture once more, since we started with Red to begin with.
Yeah.
And somehow that magic bus has to come back into the picture as
you
well.
You gotta be like on it. Oh, wait.
Yeah, I think you could be right there, Rex. You know, because that was where it started. Yeah, it's just coming around.
Well, we're coming back to you.
Okie doke. Well, I have a few to do, but for now we're going to do one more sound class, and then I'm going to see where I go from there. So right now, I'm going to put up a piece by Poetic Picasso called The Speed of the... I don't know. Hang on, I got to like... I'll let Frank tell us on the audio. So here we go.
We, the Afro-Hallo striding forth onto the field of the law of Saka's wrist, within the sword of the men of doubt. Bear the shield of Midgard in the mist. Behold the hilts of the shuttles of the mouth of the underworld of the drugger. Wince, the blazing breath of death, beat up the doomsayers of the hover. The sucking shrieks of Fulton Stebbins unleashed a grey drumming woes. The ruffled waste that are released, the slit burn to their foe for foes. Awakened by the thrill of the snow, of the thrush of Norsemen. The wrath reapers dreamt by the burns of their killed kinsmen. A roar of thunder overwhelmed the men standing amidst the deadly dust of pain. A thousand druggers swept like a mad maelstrom, a swift might in mane. Pouring rain drenched the mouths of the Norsemen in shields from the lightning. As many folk died slayed in the struggle of the spirit and fighting. The sobbing screams and cringing cries were heard by the Valkyries of Orle, who came along with the dissers for the fallen ones to take them away. As the sorrowful slaves were eyed and the stench of bursting blood rot, to the hearse on to the half, where the bones were buried in the grip of assault. Beyond the Valgrim to the gold gates, to the Valhalla above the shade, Nither. The tales of the Norsemen live on, and the sundry spells of the lost in Sither. And that rune spirit of aforetime, of the gods of Asgard, of Vanaheim and I. Odin, Frigg, Hother, Thor, Balder, riding on the steeds of the Bifrost above the clouds high. For them, the tales of the Norsemen, the star men did not wither, but the elder sitter.
Great read, Frank. Thank you very much for SoundCloud. It is greatly appreciated. And Lou, what do you think about this? Are you mutating, Lou?
Yes, I'm talking to the mute. I thought Frank did a fantastic job. This was a fantastic poem to play after that poem by Sleeping. You know, I love the power of this. I love the mythology. I loved the beauty of, how do I say, the, you know, for the Valhalla, the beauty of death, you know, you died fighting. And I thought that was so beautifully penned where, you know, he talks about that, you know, they could hear, you know, these, the Valhalla could hear the cries of the Norsemen and, you know, how they took them away. And then I loved the ending stanza, the last two ending stanza. He says, beyond the Valgrind into the gold gates of Valhalla above the shade neither, the tells of the Norsemen live on in the sundry spells of the lasting Siddhar, the etched runes between, be written of a foretime of the gods of Asgard and Valhalla nigh. And then he talks about all the Thor and Odin, you know, which is his father. And I just thought this was powerfully and wonderfully penned.
Great comment, yeah. Andrew. Thank you. And I'll agree with you because it kind of hits on that note of an epic saga like Beowulf. It's got that feel to it. And Gray, how about you?
I agree with both your comments on the subject of Frank's poem, but you know, the read was fantastic. It was. I really liked the language used, even though I didn't understand it, most of it. But he put a word glossary down there, so I'm able to go back and see what these words mean. But it is an excellent showcase of his talent, for sure. Beautiful job, Frank.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Gray. And Em, how about you?
Oh, yeah. I also had a bit of a harder time understanding it, given I didn't actually see the glossary until just now, but I felt like there was definitely like a certain like glory to it and like I don't know what the word is, but it's like it's sort of like an embellishment that sort of like draws me in and makes me kind of want to learn more about like, you know, this year's and like other things. I just
right.
I know it's like about Norse mythology. I don't know much about it, but yeah, that's about what I have.
Thank you. And Jean, what about you?
Well, you know, I think that Frank did an excellent job with the prompt for that was written for a contest for Tuesday, and you know, I sent him one prompt, and he saw that one, and he took it. And I was so pleased because I knew he could do a great job with the prompt, and he did. He really stepped up to it, and it was just a wonderful tale told. And I think that, you know, well, as always, you know, it's just fabulous work and a wonderful, wonderful audio. And I'm tickled that he wrote for the contest because, you know, it was good to have that kind of a I like Frank's point of view when he writes. He comes in from, it depends on what the genre is, but he comes in with I don't know how to put it. You know, he did a little bit of research on where he was coming from with the Norse mythology and everything. You know, it just wasn't like put together, and it wasn't just about the image. You know, he really tied it together well. So excellent job, Frank, and thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. All right. Where would you like to go next?
Well, Lou brought a piece with her to read, so I'm going to put that one up next. And then we're going to roll on back up the don't be laughing at. Don't you be laughing at me, Frank. Wild guy. Okay.
And thank you, Phil. Just to give a little bit of a background, Francine is a new poet to LMP, and I would like to welcome her. And she asked, you know, she said I could read any poem that I wanted, and I chose this one. And this is titled Six Blackbirds by Francine Wen. Six blackbirds were standing on a fallen log. Two were necking, avoiding the mob. Four were studying their quiet surroundings, deciding when and where they would be flying. Purple wildflowers were around the ground, silently swaying, their sweet scent abound. On their nectar delicious, blackbirds supped, filling their tummies, they napped and tucked. Then suddenly awoke to a guttural sound, a big cat creeping on the ground. The birds flapped their wings and flew away. The startled cat was disappointed that day. End poem.
Great read, Lou. Thank you very much. And Liliana, why don't we start with you, please? Liliana?
Oh, sorry. Were you starting with me?
Yes, please.
Oh, sorry, I didn't know. Yeah, that was actually a pretty neat little poem. I wasn't exactly expecting the ending. It was definitely very humorous. I think the rhyme scheme is pretty clean on it too. So, that's what I had.
Thank you, Em. Gray, how about you?
You did a beautiful job reading it, Lou, but I thought she captured the picture perfectly. Her rate is amazing. I really like the rhyme scheme as well. But it was just, captivated the prompt just perfectly. They suddenly awoke to a guttural sound. A big cat was creeping on the ground. The birds flapped their wings and flew away. The startled cat was disappointed that day. Yeah, so he went without a meal at that point. So, yeah, that would wreck anybody's day.
Yep.
Thank you, Gray. And Jean, how about you?
You know, this is a wonderful little poem. I love the rhyme and meter of it, and the tail pulp was good. But I really love that ending line because it turned it around, you know, from being all about the birds, you know. To something different, you know, than a disappointed cat. And, I think it was really nicely done. Great find, Lou. Great find. Much enjoyed.
Thank you for that. Lou, how about you since you got to read it?
You know, what I really loved about this is, you know, you look at the picture because, I mean, it's a stunning picture of these, you know, the blackbirds sitting on this log doing what they normally do, prune and preen each other and hang out, you know, and she just goes through the storytelling, you know, she talks about the, you know, how they're standing on the log and, you know, they're in this quiet surroundings and the beautiful scent of the flowers and, you know, they're ready for a nap, you know, it says, you know, that they had filled their tummies, they napped and tucked. Then all of a sudden in the third stanza, which is, you know, something that happens all the time because I feed birds and there's wild cats outside. It's just so funny how they will just stop moving and they'll see this cat and they all flap their wings. I mean, it's just like it's actually startling because it can actually be loud when there's so many of them. And then they just fly away and then that cat. And it's true. The cat gets startled, and it just runs off, too, like the birds in all different directions. So it was thoroughly enjoyable because it was like watching a natural nature scene, and I really enjoyed it.
I agree with you. After jump 6 feet in the air, does a 360 when the whole ass in space. that's the cat thing right there, yes. I think the one line that stands out in this was that second word. That second line in the first stanza, because it sets apart the whole tone of the piece and how everybody's sitting to a necking, avoiding the mob, and then looking back at the mob, the four in a row. So I thought that was a great thought to that, the picture to start off with and lead into. And then, of course, I did like, I got a kick out of the ending for the cat. Yes. It might be sneaky, but not today. Right, Jean, we're back to you.
Okie dokie. Well, we'll put the next piece up by Naomi Sarah. And I guess I'll give it a read. Don't tell anybody. So this is called If Only by Naomi Sarah. If only my words are snarls of smoke, spiraling as scarlet beams from blazing manes and tails, as a thousand flames raced across the land, igniting ashen eyes with glowing asteroids of hope. If only my words were the softness of the silver rain, sparkling upon sunken smiles amidst the devastation of a war-torn world, bathing broken spirits in comforting sweet whispers. Words so strong, they echoed like the wind, howling through the ruins, breathing light into shadowed hearts, enticing them to dance and sing once more. If only. End poem.
Great read, Jean. Thank you very much. And Gray, why don't we start with you, please?
You know, it was a touching rite filled with a loving sentiment. You know, she really loves the world, and if only her words could show this love to the world and do all these things that capture the hearts of man and change them from being dark and shadowed to dancing and singing. So, yeah, just a beautiful, beautiful poem. Excellent read, Bill.
Thank you, Greg.
Thank you.
And Mariana, how about you?
Yeah, some of the details here were actually quite good. I think, like, snarls of smoke is really nice. Glowing asteroids of hope. There's actually, and then, yeah, there's like repeats. I'm sorry, I'm just like kind of just still like stuck on it, but I really like it. In short, I think there's a great use of like strong verbs here, which is often like a really important thing when it comes to like setting up good imagery. So yeah, props. Very, very good. Very good work.
Excellent. Thank you, Mariana. And Lou, how about you?
You know, I thought Phil did such a gorgeous job in reading this beautiful poem by Naomi, If Only. You know, her words strike at the heart and allow us to go into the emotions of this poet, especially here where she says, snarls of smoke, spiraling as scarlet stream, from blazing manes and tails and thousands of thundering hooves, rode across a ravaged land, igniting ashen eyes with glowing asteroids of hope. If only my words were the softness of silver rain. How beautifully penned this in and sentimental it is. This is a gorgeous poem by Naomi, and congratulations on her front page pick.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Lou. All right, Jean, how about you?
Well, you know, I thought this was a great piece by Naomi, but I left a written comment, and I'm going to move on because I want to try and get at least one more, maybe two more in before the show's over. So, okay. Next piece, Rex, I'm going to ask you to read. This is Birth of a Myth by Thomas B., if you wouldn't mind.
All right. Birth of Myth by Thomas B. As night lapped against Gaia's story, morning began her birth where time waited, ready to begin its reign of light. A child watched it slip between stars, splash against the sun. Then, as the ore of life sounded its herald, memories of myth when gods strode across seas rose along the shoreline and a winged horse shone in the shadows of nightmare's monsters. Morning sterling tolls against fear's darkness. Silently, afraid to breathe, watching this wonder, poor essence, mirrored surface, neighing as ripples spreads its concentric rings, the child felt a heart pounding loudly in the chest. Pinions on impossible wings seemed to gather a breeze, foiled the grasp of gravity. Light seemed to acquire its own life, born again where time and night's pitch return and falling, tug against each other in a war for dominance. Gravity shredded with nebula, athenes, giant memories of what was and what shall be. No child knows of these things. This child, mesmerized, dreamed only of touching, riding, becoming one with this horse, its white stallion, ready to take flight. Simplicity is at the foundation of each creation, impetus nothing folded upon itself. Something brought forth and by sheer force of will claims life. The long neck of the horse turned. The child knew they were seen. Heart stopped. A long sigh escaped by lungs. Miracles are when the impossible yields to desire. A snort. A short dance in the pool of a beginning day. The child feels the moist nose. A gush of horsey breath. A dawn of wonder. And the child is upon the back as gravity yields. Wings stroke light. And Gaia awakens. And Lou, how about you? What do you think?
You know, I was just listening to read this. You did such a fantastic read on his poem. And what I loved about it was the beauty of his words and the lines in his poem that just lifted you. I love the photo he chose, because you could just literally see this spirited animal just, you know, he says, silently afraid to breathe, watching this wonder paw at the mirrored surface, gnawing as ripples spread and constant rains. You could just see this horse flying through the universe and through the cosmos. And it says, you know, it says, gravity shredding the nebula are plumes, giant memories of what was and what shall be, and how they travel back and forth. And I just thought this is just beautifully penned. Lovely.
Thank you, Lou. And Marianne, how about you?
Yeah, there were a lot of great details here. I'm kind of reading it over again as well. But I think like the gush of horsey breath, it's like that line really stood out to me as like not only a good detail, but also very like, I just, I don't hear horsey breath too often. It seems mildly amateurish, and I'm not saying that to be like insulting. I think that's actually genuinely interesting. But that was kind of the direction. And then the tired lungs thing was also a great detail I found. But, yeah, that's all I have. I'll probably write more in, like, the comment. But, yeah.
Thank you, Em. Gray, how about you? You got to unmute her.
Yeah, I do. I'm sorry. Halfway through my comments. But no, you did an excellent read on it, Rex, and I really enjoyed it. You know, it was just an epic poem on, you know, this inner child's, every inner child's dream he has painted for the world. And it's just a fantastic storyline with excellent flow, and I really liked it a lot.
I agree with that. Mystical, magical, full of imagination and wonder. All right, Gene, we're coming back to you. Got to have one more in the door.
Okay, let me see. Do we have time? Oh, we do have time. Yes, yes, yes.
Yes.
Make me happy. The next one I have actually has an audio, so I'm going to put that one up. And this is by Diane D. So here we go.
The Runt by Diane D. Life had wrapped its cactus arms around her, needles and all, then sucked the flavor from her bubblegum and gave her a hammer that she used to pull out the screws. She fought life as she did all bullies, punching willy-nilly at dead air, while they held her head with an outstretched arm, but she never stopped swatting, thought she was bigger than she was. Like geriatrics wear their ointments, she wore obstinacy. Bullheaded. I called her the Runt, a choppy potty mouth. If she was as big as her mouth, she might even win a battle or three. When we first met, we had a fist fight. I didn't want to. I humored her, followed her around like some lost penguin. She taught me to dine and dash. First time I did, I fell flat onto my ass. Adultness, black eyes, and obligations shook a need to fight each other. We became comrades. Dining at home, no dash, because I took her home, my bride, and she's still a mouth-breathing runt.
Great read, Diane. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. All right, Gene, you get to pop this one up. Unmute first.
I wasn't really ready. I think Diane did a fabulous job. Because I was half listening. So the half of me that was listening is going to tell you that I think that Diane did an excellent job with this piece. And it was clever right. And I'm glad that she did the SoundCloud for it, because I really think that she does a wonderful job presenting her own poetry. I think that, this was really, really a well-done thing here. Absolutely. Well, these geriatrics wear their ointments. She wore obstinacy, bullheaded. Okay, I like that too. It was a neat piece. Very, very well. Described. A lot of very descriptive words throughout. So it added to the piece very much. Great job with detail, Diane. Thanks for sharing.
Absolutely. We can get one more. Emiliana, how about you?
Oh, yeah. I really like the first stanza specifically. Then suck the flavor from her bubblegum was like, I mean, that just seems like really mean to do, but also just really strange. And just, I mean, yeah, I love that part. I think the rest of it was just very... It gets, like, more humorous as time goes on, because that's the other thing. I didn't really know exactly what it was about, but as it kind of goes, it just kind of it does its own, like, natural or gets into, like, its natural flow. And I thought overall it was definitely a very pleasant reading experience and listening and all that. But, yeah, that's what I had.
Excellent. Thank you, Emiliana. All right, Lou, are your giggles in there?
What? Yeah. Pardon me?
Are your giggles in with this one?
Well, actually, yes, I am. I love this because this is a story of childhood into adult life where you get to, you know, she said that she, to me, this was a beautiful tribute to her bride that she took home. Because it was her personality that shined. It says even though she fought life as she did all bullies, punching willy-nilly at dead air, while they held her head with an outstretched arm. You know, and, you know, when you know what you want and you fight against bullies and you don't back down, and, you know, I loved how she said that even when they had the first fist fight, you know, it said that this there was some type of attraction that struck at that time. And she says that even though she fell on her ass, she says that she took her home and made her her bride, and she doesn't care that she's still a mouth-breathing runt. So you go out there and you fight all them bullies, because I love that type of personality.
Thank you, Lou. And Jean, we're at the back end of the hour, so it's back to you.
Absolutely, absolutely. I want to thank everyone who called in tonight. You know, Gray, Dan, Lou, Rex, Emiliana. I'm not sure. Am I forgetting anybody? I might be. I'm sorry if I am. I'm so sorry. In memory, I'm like I can carry 2 hours worth of memory. But what a wonderful show tonight. Great poetry all the way around. Thank you, everyone who gave us SoundCloud or an audio of one sort or another. It was great to have them on hand. Just excellent poetry tonight. It was again, you know, across the board. We never knew what we were going to get, and it was wonderful like that. It's always a surprise. 12:30 tonight, we have Babbler carrying parts in her part saint. And Ephesiana is on vacation, I believe. And anyone who wants to give a call in, I'm sure that Babbler would be happy. I know Pam is having a little bit of trouble's reading the poetry right now, so we're going to work past that. So, but anyway, thank you all again, and thanks to everyone who put poetry in tonight. It was wonderful. So,
great show, Phil. Great show, Rexy.
Thank you, honey.
Had a great time.
And don't forget,
tomorrow
night, Jay Smith, and Sunday is Rex. So everybody's got you. Check out the boards. See what they're looking for topics, and feel free to put a piece up. Thanks, everybody. Love you all.
Good night, guys.
Love you guys.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night. Oh, good night.